Hey, from the Decatur Herald and Review. This is part two. This is July 27th, 2015. I'll be reading to you first from today's obituary notices. Pauline Briney of Findlay. Pauline Briney, 90, of Findlay, Illinois, passed away Saturday, July 25th, 2015, in Mason Point, Sullivan, Illinois. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, July 29th, 2015, in Lockhart Green Funeral Home in Findlay. Pastor Mike Reynolds and Pastor Kerry Cox will officiate. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Wright Cemetery near Findlay. Memorials can be made in Pauline's memory to Faith Covenant Church or to Clarence Bixler American Legion Post number 409. Van A. Silver, Decatur. Van A. Silver, 85, of Decatur, born December 25, 1929, died Saturday, July 25, 2015, at Imboden Creek Living Center in Decatur. Funeral services will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 29th at Body of Christ Ministries, 2199 West Ridland Road, Macon, Illinois. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, July 28th at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, Illinois. Graveside services will be at Hammond Cemetery, Hammond, Illinois. Following the graveside services, everyone is invited to a luncheon at Hammond United Methodist Church. Memorials may be made to Body of Christ Ministries or U of I Civil Engineering Department. Ann Swigert of Stonington. Ann Swigert, 81, of Stonington, Illinois, died at 6:20 a.m. Friday, July 24th, at her home. A memorial mass will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, August 3rd, 2015, at Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Stonington. Interment will take place in Oak Hill Cemetery, Taylorville. There will be no visitation. Memorials may be made to Holy Trinity Altar and Rosary Society or the Maintenance Fund at Holy Trinity Catholic Church, P.O. Box 257, Stonington, Illinois, 62567-0257. Margaret Lucille Ulrich of Decatur. Margaret Lucille Ulrich, 93, of Decatur, passed away Thursday, July 23, 2015, in Symphony of Decatur. Graveside services to celebrate the life of Margaret Ulrich will be 2:30 p.m. Wednesday, July 29, 2015, at Lutheran Cemetery in Decatur. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Wednesday at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Memorials may be directed to Trinity Lutheran Church. Catherine Ann Sariati Armin of Decatur. Catherine Ann Sariati Armin, 87, widow of Edward P. Armin, died Monday, July 20th, 2015. Mass of Christian burial will be 10 a.m. Tuesday, July 28th, 2015, at Our Lady of Lourdes Church. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Stephen L. Denton of Decatur. Stephen L. Reno Denton, 68, of Springfield, formerly of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, July 23, 2015, at Memorial Medical Center in Springfield. Services to celebrate Steve's life will be held at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home, 2801 North Monroe in Decatur, on Monday, July 27, 2015, at 7 p.m. Visitation will be 5:30 to 7 o'clock p.m. on Monday, July 27, 2015, at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, please consider making a memorial contribution to the Wounded War Project. Sherry M. Hoke, Pena. Sherry M. Hoke, 57, of Pena, died Friday, July 24th, 2015, in Barnes Jewish Hospital, St. Louis. Services will be 10 a.m. Wednesday in McCracken Dean Funeral Home, Pena, with Reverend Robert Russell and David Russell officiating. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday. Burial will be in Linwood Cemetery, Pena. Memorials to the Siteman Cancer Center, St. Louis, Missouri. Lyle D. Hoffman of Decatur. Lyle D. Hoffman, 84, of Decatur, died Thursday, July 23, 2015, at Heritage Health. Private family services will be held at a later date. Judy A. Kaiser of Mount Zion. Judy A. Kaiser, 65, of Mount Zion, Illinois, passed away at 10:35 p.m. Friday, July 24, 2015, in St. Mary's Hospital, Decatur. A service to celebrate Judy's life will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, July 29, 2015, at Antioch Christian Church, Long Creek. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation on Tuesday evening from 5 to 7 p.m. at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials to American Cancer Society. Sandra B. Kuntz of Decatur. Sandra B. Kuntz, 68, passed away July 23, 2015, in Crawfordville, Florida. Services will be held at TNT Hideaway, 6527 Coastal Highway, Crawfordville, Florida, on Friday, July 31st, 2015, at 10 a.m. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Crawfordville Humane Society, 9 Oak Street, Crawfordville, Florida, 32327. Nancy Ann Rude, Iliopolis. Nancy Ann Rude, 53, of rural Iliopolis, died at 11:50 p.m. Thursday, July 23rd, at home after a battle with ovarian cancer. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Monday at Illini Congregational Church, Warrensburg. No formal visitation, but friends may call on the family at the church 2 hours before the service. Burial will be in Lake Bank Cemetery, Memorials, Illini Congregational Church, Oasis Day Center, WUIS radio station. Barbara Jean Wilson, Decatur. Barbara Jean Woodrum Wilson, 81, of Decatur, passed away Thursday, July 23, 2015, with her family and friends by her side. Funeral service celebrating her life will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 29th, 2015, at West Decatur Church of God, 4500 West Main, Decatur, Illinois. Visitation will be 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, July 28th, 2015, also at the church. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park. And now further local news from Decatur. Article by Valerie Wells, Herald and Review staff writer. Starts with a picture of a little boy titled, Owen Allen applies colors to his t-shirt at the tie-dye station during Kidstock. Article entitled, Kidstock, Museum Guaranteed to Raise a Smile. Jill Davis is a lifelong Beatles fan who took a magical mystery tour in England and visited sites important to Beatles history, including Liverpool and Abbey Road. I came back and I thought, gosh, I have enough to write something about every letter in the alphabet, Davis said, and she was further inspired by the discovery that her granddaughter didn't know anything about the Beatles. The result was A, B, See the Beatles, an alphabet book with illustrations by Davis's friend Gene Conway. Kids can learn their letters and some tidbits about the greatest band that ever lived, as Davis calls the group, while adults can enjoy the illustrations and the references to Beatles lore, such as K is for Kooky Kaleidoscope Eyes, a reference to the lyrics of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. The book is available on her website, www.abcthebeatles.com. I guess it's abcthebeatles.com. And she'll also be signing books in front of Giggles During Arts in Central Park in September. Davis gave readings of her book at the Children's Museum of Illinois on Saturday as part of the museum's annual Kidstock event, a play on the 1969 Woodstock Rock Festival. Children could make kaleidoscope eyes by decorating paper eye masks, tie-dyed t-shirts, listen to a performance by children's recording artist Little Miss Anne, and put their handprints on a fence destined for the Mercy Gardens at Good Samaritan Inn. All the activities were meant to evoke the spirit of the time in kid-friendly ways. There's something for every age, said Brenda Crutcher, who brought husband Craig and sons Sean, Trevor, Gabe, and one-year-old Owen to the event. Little Miss Anne was actually born during Woodstock in 1969, though so far she's been unsuccessful in figuring out which artist was performing at the moment of her birth. She's an instructor at Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago, the oldest arts organization in the country, she said, and a former Chicago Public Schools teacher. Usually I have a whole band with me, but traveling, you know, she said with a chuckle, I only have a drummer with me today. Her performances are interactive and get the kids on their feet to be part of the show with songs from all four of her CDs included. Ireland Clayman is the museum's tie-dye expert and knows all the tricks. I asked if I could do this, she said, working on preparing a t-shirt for the process. My mom and I tie-dye all the time and have for years. Volunteers Anae Hunt and Rachel Wilson presided over the fence panels. It was Hunt's idea to have kids put their handprints and autographs on the white portions, while the natural portions will eventually be the home of original artwork. The fence will be one more way the community has ties to the Mercy Gardens, Hunt said. I'm going to be a junior at the University of Illinois in the fall, Hunt said. I decided to come home this summer and do something productive. Kidstock is an annual event at the museum, said Jen McMillan, Director of Marketing and Development, and using the theme of Woodstock was a way to give it a colorful flair. From the Crime and Courts page, in Decatur, by Huey Freeman, a staff writer for the Herald and Review, man arrested after pickup truck chase, ramming. A 20-year-old man was arrested on charges of aggravated assault and reckless conduct after he chased a 39-year-old male driver for more than 10 miles in his pickup truck, then rammed his vehicle. The victim told police that Dylan S. Pick began chasing him at Timber Grove Apartments, 1707 South Country Club Road, shortly before 1 a.m. Thursday. With Pick on his tail, the victim drove south onto Lost Bridge Road to Illinois 121, drove through Mount Zion, then west onto Main Street. When they reached the 700 block of Main Street, in the vicinity of the grade school, Pick changed lanes to pass the victim, said an affidavit by Mount Zion Patrol Officer Christina Clow. Pick cut off the victim, causing him to slam on his brakes, Clow wrote in her statement. Pick then slammed on his brakes and put his truck in reverse, causing his truck to rear-end the front of the victim's truck. Both the vehicles stopped after the crash. Believing that the younger man was going to harm him, the victim drove away, taking a right turn onto Westland Drive and another right onto Oakview Court. Pick was taken into custody by Mount Zion police officers about 2 hours later. During an interview, he admitted that he chased the victim from the apartment complex to Main Street. He also admitted that he passed the victim while approaching a crest on West Main Street and slowed down to force the victim to stop his vehicle. Pick then admitted to causing the accident and leaving the scene of the accident, as well as failing to report it. He did not have a valid driver's license or proof of insurance. At the time of his arrest, Pick was serving a 6-month court supervision term after he pleaded guilty June 15th to reckless driving in Macon County Circuit Court. He has a pending case in Logan County where he was arrested July 14th for possession of drug paraphernalia and liquor consumption by a minor. After he was booked into the Macon County Jail on Thursday, Pick's bond was set at $10,000. He was released from custody Friday after posting $1,000 cash bail. Pick is due in court for his arraignment August 25th. Representative Rodney Davis, whose district skirts the borders of the plant, said he hopes the company reconsiders the extremely disappointing news. However, my office will do everything we can to assist workers and their families during this transition and help Mitsubishi as they try to find a buyer to retain as many jobs as possible, the Taylorville Republican said. An article by Valerie Wells, a Herald and Review staff writer, titled Hoop House Holds Hope for DIGG. From Decatur, Milton Barbee has done some prison time. But now that he's a paid apprentice in the Decatur is Growing Gardeners program, he has found his niche. I'm doing something for the community instead of being on the streets, said Barbee, whose eyes light up when he talks about his love for nurturing growing things. He was on hand at Good Samaritan Inn on Friday when the master gardeners from the University of Illinois Extension had a tough decision to make. Which hoop house, designed by Caterpillar Inc. engineers, was the best. Hoop houses are small greenhouses made on the cheap of cast-off materials such as pallets and scrap lumber. Caterpillar employees have been regular volunteers at Good Samaritan and DIGG, D-I-G-G, serving in the inn and showing up with graders and backhoes to help turn empty city lots into attractive and productive gardens. This time, manufacturing engineers grouped themselves into teams and competed to see who could design the best small greenhouse. I think they like the idea of rubbing it in each other's faces, said Inn Executive Director, the Reverend Stacy Brohard, chuckling. The judges did not mince words when they discussed the features of each hoop house. They all had their good points, but the rainwater collection barrels could be havens for mosquitoes if the openings aren't sealed better. Construction has to be sturdy enough to withstand storms and winter weather. With those things in mind, the house that came closest was by Some Assembly Required, as the team dubbed itself. Their hoop house wasn't the least expensive, costing $3.30 per square foot. But the added stability of extra 2x4s and a regular door will help it withstand the winter weather, said Drew Kripe, a member of the team that designed it. About 5 months ago, I met with a group of about 20 manufacturing engineers, and I presented about industrial drop materials that's going to get thrown away anyway, Bruhard said. That's what we're really trying to show folks from the neighborhood, is they can take scrap value stuff and they can grow their own foods. Brouhard said he also wants to keep the paid apprentices busy year-round. Many of them lack job skills and have felony records, making jobs harder to get. The DIGG gardens in empty lots around the city only provide work for them in summer. In this way, not only will Good Samaritan and Northeast Community Fund enjoy fresh produce year-round, but those apprentices will have work all year, too. An article by Valerie Wells, the Herald and Review staff writer, titled Milliken Event Encourages Leadership, from Decatur. Justin Stanford's voice teacher back home in Chicago suggested he should consider a career in opera. I want to be well-rounded, he said at Milliken University, where he is participating in the Long Vandenberg Leadership Academy. I'd like to explore R&B and other things, too. Incoming freshmen in the program met for the first time July 15th to learn the history of the two people it's named for and to jump into their first project, which is to research and write a presentation on one of several isms that include racism, classism, adultism, heterosexism, and more. Students chose their top three from a list and were grouped by similar choices, while Millikan's archivist, Amanda Pippett, helped them think about ways to narrow the broad topic to a specific one. In social justice issues, you have a lot of leeway in picking something that interests you, she said. Think about headlines that grabbed your attention. What do you feel the impact is on you, your family, and your friends? The 5-day academy focuses on leadership and social justice, commitment, and academics. The students will live in the same dorm with Long Vandenberg scholars who began in previous years and will work together throughout their years at Millikan, said Ngozi Onyora, assistant professor in the School of Education. Their mentors will come from faculty and the community, as well as their older counterparts. The academy is named for Fred Thomas Long, the first black graduate of Millikan, class of 1918, who went on to be a professional baseball player and coach, and Marion Vandenberg, the first female black graduate of Millikan in 1934. In her class was James Parsons, for whom Parsons School is named. She was a teacher later in life. Scholars chosen for the program receive scholarships, but the real value is the leadership training, said student Gabrielle Hood, a 2015 graduate of Eisenhower High School. Student mentor Philip Ganley of Decatur wrote in the introductory booklet that the scholarship money was the initial draw for him, but he immediately realized the program had much more to offer. This is where you will begin to mature, he said. The college experience will change your perspective on everything. From Decatur, by Ryan Voiles, Herald and Review staff writer. Decatur Township looks for general assistance examples. Some Decatur Township officials are looking to other Central Illinois townships for examples of how they administer their general assistance program. A proposed change brought to the Township Board of Trustees earlier this month would adopt a flat grant policy that would set a variety of requirements for people who seek general assistance. Requirements would include a person sending a number of resumes a month or doing community and volunteer service that could lead to education or employment opportunities. A failure to meet the requirements or employment would exclude a person from receiving assistance, which is $100 a month. While the measure failed as some trustees wanted more time to discuss the change, Township Supervisor Lisa Stanley said she was merely hoping to push general assistance in line with other townships across the state. This will save taxpayers dollars, she said at the time. We're merely following the rules that others do as well. While officials from the Township Officials of Illinois said they do not keep track of how townships disperse their general assistance, they said the proposed changes voted down by the Decatur Township are fairly common among townships. One that has been referred to in past meetings of the Board of Trustees is the Capital Township, which operates throughout most of Springfield. The township's general assistance program requires those deemed unemployable to have a doctor's note to verify the condition and to apply for supplemental security income or another form of financial aid before they receive aid from the township. Capital Township is one that Stanley has expressed admiration for several times, especially after its general assistance office implemented its own workfare program in June. The program Help Match eligible applicants who must be unemployed, have no children in the home, and are willing to work without any physical limitations, with employers who have signed up to offer temporary paid work to Capital Township residents between the ages of 18 and 62. A plan to implement a pilot program for workfare in the Decatur Township, which had operated one until 2011, failed last fall due to questions of its cost and implementation. A similar program is used by the Bloomington Township, which also requires recipients to attend an orientation and then return an application package to qualify for assistance. General assistance has been a topic of heated discussion for several months, as the township's Board of Trustees has discussed ways to lower the amount of money going toward administration and provide more aid for residents, especially as the amount of money garnered from local property taxes declines. Decatur Township provides transitional assistance to its clients, which includes a medical card and $100 a month. About 250 clients are served every month. From Decatur by Valerie Wells, staff writer for Herald and Review. School district to end use of daycare addresses for attendance. In March, during a meeting to finalize budget cuts required by shrinking revenue and the state's budget woes, the Decatur School Board heard a recommendation to discontinue the child care form. Until the upcoming school year, the Decatur School students who spent the before and after school hours at a daycare or with a babysitter could attend school based on that child care address rather than their own, and busing was adjusted accordingly. Rochelle Clark, Director of Student Services, said some 22% of Decatur school children were signed up. Because district policies are already in place to discontinue the program, the board did not have to vote on or approve the change. With high numbers of families enrolling in schools other than their own, some families couldn't send their children to their own neighborhood school, Clark said at the meeting. The district adopted a pod system some years ago, grouping buildings geographically to balance lopsided numbers. When a classroom reaches its limit, children are assigned to another building in the pod or offered a seat at a magnet school with extra space. Even with that system, enrolling students based on their child care arrangements had become unwieldy, Clark said. This could cause some families difficulties who are used to having children picked up and dropped off at their child care. Now those families will have to arrange other transportation. Children who remain with the same child care provider as last year will be grandfathered in. Families are receiving letters explaining the changes, and magnet schools will not be affected, Clark said. Magnet schools already accept students from throughout the district and provide transportation if the child lives farther than a mile and a half from the building. Pod placements are temporary, she said. The next year, students are returned to their home school. Magnet schools are for the duration. Child care provider Crystal Sturgeon said she lives in the boundaries of Parsons School, and so do most of her clients. But if the new policy means the bus won't transport her school-age charges, she'll have to do it, and her van is not big enough. I was relying on busing to get them to and from my house as well as the parents, she said. They have to be at work, and they get off later than school is in session. This has really affected my families, affects my income, and affected the parents if they're not able to find someone to transport their kids. Not everyone is in a position to transport their kids back and forth to school, whether it's a lack of transportation or they're in a situation like mine. We will now take a break from reading the Decatur Herald and Review on July 27th, 2015. The reading will continue, and stay tuned for the second part. Thank you.